Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're really getting into something ancient, but surprisingly relevant. Psalm 4.
Yeah, it's this powerful prayer, a meditation, really, from King David.
Exactly. And our mission, our goal for this deep dive, is to pull out that timeless wisdom, see how it actually helps us today.
Especially with things like finding peace, right? Or encouraging obedience, strengthening faith.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, this psalm feels both intensely personal, like David's own cry, but also like a message for everyone.
Probably written when things were tough for him, maybe national unrest, personal betrayal. We don't know for sure.
Which makes it hit home even more now, I think. All these anxieties we face. So how does this ancient prayer still speak so clearly? Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
So it kicks off with David's plea, right? Verse 1. It's raw. He's asking God, the God of my righteousness, to hear him out.
Yeah, it's immediate, direct.
But what really grabs me is how he immediately brings up the past. He says, "Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress."
That line is crucial.
It's not just you saved me, it's you enlarged me, made me bigger somehow in the middle of the struggle.
It's fascinating, isn't it? That phrase, enlarged me. It suggests God uses pressure, those tight spots, not to crush us, but actually to expand our capacity.
Our understanding, our faith.
Exactly. It kind of goes against our instinct to just run from distress, doesn't it?
Totally.
But David's saying, no, wait, it was in that hardship that I actually grew. So for us, when we feel anxious under pressure,
Psalm 4 says,
what? Remember?
Remember how God stretched you before, how he came through, how maybe those trials, looking back, built something in you, strength, character.
It's not about wanting bad stuff to happen, but seeing it differently when it does.
Precisely. Turn to God first. Remember his track record in your life. That strengthens your faith right there, that process of remembering and trusting.
That's a really powerful way to reframe distress, not just escaping it, but potentially growing through it.
Yeah.
Okay, but then David shifts gears, doesn't he?
He does. Big shift. He goes from this personal prayer to talking directly to others. These sons of men, what's
Yeah.
that about?
Yeah, sons of men. Basically, he's addressing people, humanity in general. In verses 2 and 3, he really challenges them.
How so?
He asks, "How long will ye love vanity and seek after leasing?" Leasing, that's an old word for falsehood, right? Lies.
So how long will you chase empty things and lies?
Pretty much. He's calling out that, universal pull towards stuff that doesn't last, superficial things.
We see that everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. But then he hits them with this core truth. But know that the Lord hath set apart him that is godly for himself.
Okay, set apart. What does that mean exactly? Is it like being special?
It's not about God playing favorites in a superficial way. It's more that God recognizes and values, he cherishes those who genuinely try to live his way.
So it's a challenge. Think about what really matters.
Yes, and an assurance. God hears those devoted to him. It's a call to check your priorities.
So he's basically saying, stop getting caught in the comparison trap.
You could definitely read it that way.
Because we see that today, right? The pressure to chase, I don't know, clout online, more money, things that look like success, but feel empty.
Vanity and lies, just like David said, they often lead to restlessness, not peace.
So David's warning feels incredibly relevant. It's pushing us to think about what we're really pouring our lives into. If God is set apart the godly, it suggests there's a better path, a path that encourages obedience, not just because you have to, but because you understand it leads to something real.
Something eternal, yeah. Something that truly satisfies, unlike those fleeting pleasures.
Right. Pursuing what lasts.
Exactly. And that kind of shift in focus away from the fleeting towards the eternal perfectly sets up David's next bit of advice.
Which is?
In verses 4 and 5, he says, "Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still."
Be still, that jumps
It
out.
really does. He also talks about offering sacrifices of righteousness and trusting God. Now, those sacrifices for us aren't literal animals anymore.
It's about how we live,
Yeah.
our actions.
Yeah, living with integrity, offering our obedience, our gratitude, that's our spiritual sacrifice. But that call to stillness,
Wow.
especially now.
In our world, constant noise, hot takes, instant reactions everywhere. David's saying, pause, go quiet, talk to your own heart, be still before God. That's radical advice.
It really is. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. I mean, the imagery is so vivid.
It is.
It's about looking inward, right? Deliberately stopping before you just react.
Yeah.
In this culture where everything's instant, every thought can be blasted out, This idea of pausing, reflecting, it feels almost rebellious.
It's a spiritual discipline, really. Yeah. It stops us from saying or doing things impulsively, things we regret.
Yeah.
Sinning, as David puts it.
So it encourages like thoughtful obedience,
yeah.
giving yourself space to align with God's wisdom instead of just your gut reaction.
Precisely. Imagine David dealing with like push notifications and 24/7 news.
Yeah. Yeah, he really emphasizes that need for intentional quiet, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He absolutely does. And it brings up a big question for us. How do we find that stillness when distractions are just constant?
Good question.
Because David's not just talking about physical quiet. It's a quietness of spirit where you actually connect with your own heart and with God.
And that practice, that stillness, helps you sort out what really matters, like true joy versus fake happiness.
Exactly. David points this out in verses 6 and 7. He sees people asking, who will show us any good? They're looking everywhere for external signs of good fortune.
More stuff, basically. More corn, more wine, as he puts it.
Yeah, more material things. But David says, hold on. The gladness in my heart that God put there, that feeling of God's presence, his favor, that beats any harvest, any amount of stuff.
He found a joy deeper than just temporary gains.
Much deeper.
That's a huge redefinition of joy, isn't it? We tend to measure it by, you know, followers, money, status.
External metrics, yeah.
But David's saying none of that guarantees real peace, lasting contentment.
Yeah.
He felt a light put in his heart by God.
It's not just a fleeting feeling. It's this deep, steady joy from God's presence, not just from a bigger bank account or more likes.
And recognizing that as the source of joy that has to strengthen your faith, right? Knowing it's anchored in something more reliable than circumstances.
Immensely. It makes obedience feel less like a burden and more like the path to what you're actually looking for, real fulfillment.
Which all builds toward the end of the psalm, that beautiful conclusion in verse 8.
Yes, the peace.
He says, with total confidence, it seems, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep. And why?
The reason is so simple, yet profound. For thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety.
It's not peace because the problems are gone. It's peace right in the middle of them.
It's a radical trust. Think about today, people struggling with sleep, minds racing, overwhelmed by uncertainty.
So David offers a kind of spiritual practice.
You could call it that. Claim that peace at night. Consciously decide, I'm laying these worries down, praying them through. Trusting God to handle the night shift, basically.
Letting go of control.
Yes. And that act, that release and trust, it builds faith. It turns anxiety into a chance to lean harder on God. It fosters both obedience. God does call us to rest and stronger faith in his care.
Okay, so if we boil Psalm 4 down for today, the core message seems to be, what, pray first.
Pray first, absolutely. Remember how God's enlarged you even through hard times?
Then pause often. Be still before reacting.
Yes. Take time for stillness, reflection. Don't just follow the world's frantic pace.
Trust God. Know that real joy, lasting joy, comes from him, not chasing the next fleeting thing.
Exactly. His presence over possessions.
And finally, sleep in peace. Trust his safety, even when things feel uncertain.
It's simple, but wow, what a powerful guide for getting through life's storms.
What's really amazing is how Psalm 4 feels like a complete toolkit, a spiritual practice for navigating uncertainty.
It really is. It's this potent reminder that real security, real joy, they're found in God, not in our circumstances, not in what we own. It forces you to look inward and upward for what truly sustains you.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? David had this incredible trust. Enough to sleep peacefully despite real danger and opposition. What would it look like for you to truly lay it down and sleep in safety tonight, trusting God alone with whatever's weighing on your heart?